This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you ever visit the Illinois Supreme Court building in Springfield, head up to the second floor, take a left at the top of the stairs, and head to the end of the main corridor, and that's where you'll find what's known as the attorney's room. It's where lawyers arguing before the court can hang up their coats, get a glass of water, put the finishing touches on their arguments at a long glass-top conference table. While you're there, your eyes will be drawn to the walls, which are lined with rows and rows of portraits of past Illinois Supreme Court justices, mostly paintings. Then, in the 20th century, they started using photographs. But what will overwhelm you is how many of these portraits are of men. Going back to the year 1818, when Illinois became the 21st state admitted to the Union, there have been just under 130 people to serve as justices on the Illinois Supreme Court. Until the 1990s, zero of them were women. The late Marianne McMorrow of Chicago broke that glass ceiling in 1992. For nearly a decade, she was alone on the court until 2001, when Rita Garman became the second woman to serve on Illinois' highest court. Justice Rita Bell Garman, Bell by birth, Garman by marriage, was born in 1943 in Aurora, Illinois. She was appointed an associate judge in Vermilion County in 1974, elected circuit court judge in 86, served on the appellate court beginning in 95, and joined the Supreme Court in 2001. She was Chief Justice from 2013 through 2016. If you ever find yourself in court in Danville, the seat of Vermilion County in East Central Illinois, you will be in the dock in the Rita B. Garman Courthouse. Justice Garman is presently the longest-serving judge in Illinois, but her career is coming to an end tomorrow. She joins me now in studio to talk about her life and career. Justice Garman, welcome to The 21st Show. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, Brian, for asking me.
So I want to begin because you became a lawyer at a time when that was not an intuitive career path for women.
That is correct.
When did you know you wanted to become a lawyer?
When I was probably about 15 or 16 years old, I was thinking about careers and going to college, and I thought, you know, being a lawyer sounds like a great idea. And what it really appealed to me was the fact that it has such a wide variety of opportunities after you graduate from law school. I mean, you don't have to be in a courtroom. You can teach or write or work for a corporation or do any one of a number of other things. So I thought it would give me a lot of options, and I wanted to pursue that.
Yeah. I've heard college-educated women of that era say that there were two generally accepted career paths, which was becoming a nurse or becoming a teacher.
Yes, or a secretary.
Secretary.
There were three paths.
Okay, a third path. Yes. What made it possible for you to think you could become a lawyer?
Well, my parents were very encouraging, and they told me to, you know, examine all my options. And my dad used to say, you know, follow your dreams and aim for the top, and you don't know what might happen. And he and my mother were big proponents of education and getting as much education as possible and preparing yourself for life in the outside.
So you go to law school in Iowa. What was it like in law school at the time?
Well, when I went to law school, of course, people couldn't imagine why I was going to law school. I met my husband at the University of Illinois when we were juniors, and we both went to law school together. We decided to go to the University of University of Iowa because my husband had grown up in Urbana and gone through the Urbana school system and the University of Illinois, and he wanted to go somewhere else just to get a change of scenery, and I thought,
sure.
Well, sounds like a good idea. So we went to Iowa for the wrong reason.
You traded in the corn of Central Illinois for the corn of Iowa.
We went to another I state, but we thought, well, if we go to a sister state of Illinois, it will be the laws will be the same and we can come back easily. And that's not true, but no one told us that. And we didn't have anyone counseling us or anything like that. So, and we didn't have any lawyers in the family, so we went off to the University of Iowa. But when I went to law school, people said to me, well, why don't you go to work and put your husband through law school? And I would say, well, because I want to go to law school. And then when I went to law school, I found it was not a very welcoming environment. Some of the professors were outright hostile and would say things like, you're just here to catch a husband. Or they would say, why are you taking up a seat a man could have that will support a family? Or they would say, you're not really serious about this, or you'll never practice law. So that attitude was pretty prevalent in the 60s. And then, but when I graduated, I couldn't find a job because they would say to me, "Well, what would we do with you? No one will want to talk to a woman lawyer." And the firms would say, "Well, you can't. Can you type and can you make coffee? Or we don't need somebody more to do research, that sort of thing." Some places said to me, "How can you be a lawyer when your husband's a lawyer? Wouldn't you feel like you had to go home and discuss all your cases with him?" And I would say, "Well, not any more than he'd feel he had to come home and discuss all his cases with me." But they just couldn't imagine a woman practicing law.
How did that affect you in your own confidence in your career choice?
Well, it was frustrating because I had a really strong academic record and as an undergraduate and in law school. And, you know, I found that when I got out of law school, I interviewed for a position with Continental Bank in Chicago. And another classmate of mine from the University of Iowa also interviewed. We were both offered jobs as trust officers. And he was offered $1,500 a year more than I was for the same job.
Hmm.
And $1,500 a year in 1968 was way a lot of money. So, you know, it was a challenging journey.
Yeah. I read somewhere that when you and your late husband, Gil, were admitted to the bar on the same day, I gather,
yes,
there was a photo of you, and the
yes,
caption was, "Mr. and Mrs. Gil Garman."
That's correct. We're admitted to the practice of law. That was in the Illinois Bar Journal.
And you didn't have a first name.
I didn't have a first name.
Where did you ended up working in legal aid to begin?
I did, and it was by luck because the director of the legal aid office, at that time it was funded by the federal government, but they were local offices. And they had one lawyer as the legal aid attorney and two secretaries. And the lawyer got into some kind of an argument or disagreement with the board, and he walked out. So they didn't have anybody. And I had arrived in Danville with my husband in August of 1968, and this was probably in October or November. And the chairman of the legal aid committee called me and said, the conversation went kind of like, "Well, you're not doing anything, are you?" And I said, "No, I'm looking for work." And he said, "Well, would you come down to the legal aid office and keep the doors open? And they may, you know, the federal government may close us down, but if you can come down and help some people, that would be really good." And, you know, keeping that in mind. And I said, "Well, I'm willing to consider it, but I've never practiced law. I just got out of law school. What do I know about running a legal aid office?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, if you'll come down and help us, we'll help you if you get into anything you don't know how to do." I think that's a pretty much of a quote.
Yeah.
So I thought that was fair enough. So
yeah,
I went down to the legal aid office for $90 a week and worked there. And I had two wonderful legal secretaries that were well experienced.
I'm sorry, we're gonna have to take a break, and when we come back, we're gonna continue speaking with Illinois Supreme Court Justice Rita Garman, who is retiring this week. More to come. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are speaking for the rest of the hour today with Justice Rita Garman of the Illinois Supreme Court. She is, I believe, the longest-serving justice on the court at present and is the longest-serving judge in Illinois, first elected an associate judge by the circuit judges in Vermilion County,
yes,
in that circuit in 1974.
Right.
She has been a pathbreaker in her career as a rare woman lawyer, as we were hearing before the break. Now it's becoming more common. The court has three women on it. It will continue to have three women on
That's
it
correct.
When Justice White succeeds you tomorrow. I want to talk about your time on the high court. You're appointed there in 2001. You win election in your own right in 2002. Are there particular cases that you're particularly proud of that you want to be remembered for?
Well, I had a number of cases. In fact, the librarian at the Supreme Court has advised me I have authored 242 opinions for the Illinois Supreme Court during my tenure as the majority opinions, and then there are a smaller number of special concurrences and dissents.
Sure.
So I've written a good lot of cases, you know, so many that it would be very hard to pick out one or two that really are important, because they were all very important cases.
Sure, to the parties involved.
Yes, absolutely. I will say that before the death penalty was abolished, I wrote the last five opinions for the Supreme Court on death penalty cases. I was beginning to think I was getting singled out, because I was like, how come I get all these cases?
Yeah, that was during the moratorium, though.
Right,
yeah.
Yes.
And I know you authored the Cabayas opinion,
which
was a dog sniff case Attorney General Madigan eventually tried to appeal that decision to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court.
The original case was appealed. In the original case, I dissented, and because the court ruled that the dog sniff was a search. And it was argued in the United States Supreme Court by Attorney General Madigan, and they reversed it. So when it came back, I wrote the opinion for the Illinois Supreme Court.
Some of our longtime listeners might remember, and as you know, I covered the Illinois Supreme Court for a number of years at the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. And something that struck me as interesting about the Illinois Supreme Court is, even though it had four justices who were elected as Democrats, three who were elected as Republicans, it's not a court that you could predict the 4-3 decisions on.
That's correct.
All the time, at least, like you can with the U.S. Supreme Court, which was 5-4 for so many years now, 6-3. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how the justices, how you and your colleagues approach those decisions?
You know, it commonly is thought that it's a political branch. In Illinois, it's not a political branch. We are, as you correctly referenced, elected by the parties. But when we're there and deliberating, and we've had a very clear, during my tenure on the court, the justices have been very collegial. We come at it from different points of view. Some of our colleagues are city people. They grew up in Chicago or metropolitan areas. I grew up in Oswego, which was a small town. Justice Carmier, Justice Overstreet, from downstate in Illinois. So we come at it from really different perspectives. But politics doesn't enter the discussion. Never comes up at the table. And it really comes down to the way the justice views the law and the evidence in the decision making. I will say that more often where we are in Illinois, our geographical location may influence our selection of cases. At one time I can remember we had a case that was on an oil and gas lease. And the court was not going to take that case. And Justice Carmier, who was from the deep southern Illinois, from Nashville, Illinois, made quite a presentation at the table about why that issue was so important, because there are so many oil and gas leases in southern Illinois.
Sure.
and even up into central Illinois. So we did take the case, and it was an important decision. Similarly, I remember at one time we had a case that came out of Cook County, and it was about condominium law. And some of us didn't see that it was that important. And I remember Justice Freeman made, a very strong argument about how important that was, because there are so many housing arrangements that are in metropolitan areas that are condominiums. So we did take that case. Sometimes those of us from rural areas will urge taking cases that are like about drainage, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, the people from large cities,
Right. Drainage
is not an issue for them. So
there is a stunning amount of statutes in Illinois dedicated to condominiums and every other subject under the sun. So you say the justice, you don't see the court as political, but I think there are outside forces attempting to politicize the court, right? You've seen colleagues. Justice Carmier had a lot of money spent against him in his original election and on his behalf, as well as on retention. On the other side of the ideological spectrum, Justice Kilbride had two attempts to prevent him from being retained, and the second one was successful.
That's right.
Do you see the court, people trying to politicize the court, and how is the court responding to that?
Well, we are very strongly resisting that that temptation. We want to be justice for all people, and not have not be swayed by politics. I think judicial independence is a critical aspect of the continuation of our system of government as we know it. The judges have to be free to make decisions, some of them unpopular decisions, but they have to be able to do that without worrying about political backers or whoever might be perceived as would have a position to gain from the decision of the court. We need to be fair and impartial and unbiased and give a balanced and reasonable assessment. And whatever that comes down, that's the way it is.
You stood for election to the court, to courts in Illinois, four or five times, I think, in retention over the years. But is it a good idea that Illinois elects its judges?
You know, I'm not going to say election is maybe the best method, but, it's a good method. And I think that until we come up with something that's better, we shouldn't throw out what we have. I think it's important that the public does have a voice in who is selected as their judge. I always would tell people, particularly at the circuit court level, that whoever is the circuit judge may have more of an opportunity to impact your life than a U.S. Supreme Court justice.
And if people aren't familiar with circuit, these are the county judges.
Yeah, the county judges.
Divorce, criminal law,
things like that. Exactly, because those are the cases they're going to hear. Divorce, child custody, criminal cases. If you're in an fender bender accident and you need to sue the other person to be made whole, those local judges are the people that are going to decide those cases. So you really want to have people that are knowledgeable about the law, that have the right temper, that'll listen to both sides and make a reasoned decision.
Let me just take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Illinois Supreme Court Justice Rita Garman, who is retiring this week after 21 years on the court, if I have that right. Yes. We've been talking about the efforts to politicize the court from outside of it. The district boundaries of the Illinois Supreme Court seats have been unchanged, or had been unchanged, since the judicial article of 1964 until last year, when the Democrats in the General Assembly redrew the boundaries. I wonder, what do you think of that change? Does this fits in my mind, this fits into attempts of people to, shore up the Democratic majority on the court, if you will.
Well, they did it by population. And, of course, the population in Illinois is very skewed. It's in the northeast corridor of the state. So the 5th district went from 48 counties.
It's basically the southern half of the state now. It had been the lower third.
And the 4th district, which I represent, went from 30 counties to 41 counties. So between the 4th and the 5th district justices, we have 89 of the 102 counties in Illinois. So it shows you where the population of Illinois is. As I said, it's in the northeast corridor of the state.
Yeah. And there was, I know under the old districts, one of the things that I had been told is that Cook County was about right. Downstate maybe was overrepresented. The suburbs were underrepresented because there had been so much population growth there under the old map.
Well, then they'll have two justices from the suburbs, because the second district now is Lake and McHenry and Kane and Kendall. And then the third district now picked up DuPage County and DuPage and Will, and then what was the 13th Circuit. Mm-hmm. So definitely they'll have two justices representing the
suburbs, burbs. So in the few minutes we have remaining, pulling these threads together, the money spent on judicial elections, the efforts to unseat justices for reasons that are, not criminal behavior or anything like that, but really ideological differences, the remapping of the court, why should the people of Illinois trust that their judges are not influenced by the people who help reflect them, that they're not influenced by these outside forces?
Well, I don't think they are. I don't think they are. And I think that that should be an important concern for the public moving forward. It's important that we maintain independence.
What do you hope your legacy will be when people think back on your time on the court?
Well, I hope that they believe I was open to ideas, that I worked hard, that I was fair to people, that I diligently discharged my responsibilities on the court, and that I did the best I could. I'm very proud of the fact that I think I have opened the door a little wider for people, for women in the profession, and made them know that they can have a seat at the table. I think that would be a very powerful legacy.
Do you think we're almost coming to the point where it's not as remarkable? I mean, I had that big, long intro when I introduced you in this
yes.
conversation about all the men, and the white men in particular.
Yes.
Are we turning a corner there?
Well, I hope so. I think it's important for diversity that we judge people by the content of their ability and their temperament and their integrity, and that we not look at what I call our artificial boundaries, like race or gender. We got to look at people.
And in the final moment we have remaining, what's next for you? Somebody was joking with me in the newsroom today. Are we going to see a Judge Rita TV show or something like that?
Oh, I certainly hope not. I'm hoping to travel more. I have 5 grandchildren, 3 younger ones that live out of state that are 10, 6, and 3. I'd like to spend more time with them to be a part of their life so they don't just see me as somebody they see on a picture somewhere. And that was they call me Nana, that was their Nana, that I can actually be a part of their lives and spend more time with my friends, more time with my sister, and do a lot of traveling.
Justice Rita Garman is a member of the Illinois Supreme Court, the longest-serving current member of the Illinois Supreme Court. She'll be retiring tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Yes. Justice Garman, thank you so much for being with us on the 21st show.
My pleasure, and thank you for asking me.
And that's all the time we have for our program today. Once more, I want to urge you to visit our website, 21stshow.org. Returning to our earlier conversation, we'll have links out to the How You Can Help pages from WTTW and the Sun-Times and other sources following that tragedy in Highland Park, which we will continue to follow on the show. Also want to suggest subscribing to our podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just on our website, 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find links to our Twitter page, Facebook, every other way to get in touch with us. We do love hearing from you about what you thought about the show. Please keep in touch. The 21st Show is produced by Jose Zepeda and Aiden Choate. Our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.